You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Wow, they want to impeach the president. This is amazing. I mean, seriously, they're seriously talking about this. It started out with Ed Meese. Remember Ed Meese? He was the guy, he was the attorney general during the Reagan administration, and he put together this commission on pornography. And he volunteered to watch a whole bunch of pornography. My recollection is it was something like 60 hours of pornography, including things. I mean, there's this whole variety of pornography that his commission studied, child porn, snuff porn, torture porn, you name it. Right. And Ed Meese watched a bunch of it and then came out with a statement that it will warp your brain. So he was the first guy yesterday. He came. He's kind of an older guy now, but he came out, the former Reagan attorney general, and he's currently with the Heritage Foundation. And he said Obama may have really tried to override the Constitution itself. Now, just keep in mind, President Obama has issued fewer executive orders than any president in the last 100 years. Seriously, fewer executive orders than any other president in the last 100 years. I'm not sure who was president in 1912. Would that have been Taft? Yeah, just before Ought, 12. 12 would have been an election year. So, well, whoever it was. Anyhow, it was after Teddy Roosevelt. But it's... Here you got Ed Meese saying, yeah, this is clearly unconstitutional. Another one of these bozos, Congressman Steve Stockton, he says he's going to introduce, he's a Republican from Texas for our viewers in Texas. If Steve Stockton happens to be your congressman, you might want to call him up and thank him or not, as the case may be. The president, executive order, let me just clarify this for a minute. Executive orders are things that the president does within the context of powers that he has that have been given to him either by Congress or the Constitution. All right, let's just make that really, really clear. Congress will pass a law saying, clean up the lakes. Too much mercury in the lakes. You got to clean up the lakes. Here's $100 million. Clean up the lakes. And they pass that along to the executive branch because Congress doesn't do anything. I mean, not quite literally. They pass laws, but you're not going to find Louis Gohmert out there cleaning up your lake. Or in this case, Congressman Steve Stockman. He's not going to actually do it. Instead, they say to the president, to the executive branch, you do it, and here's the funds. Either hire somebody to do it or hire government employees to do it, but get it done. And sometimes Congress specifies how it's to be done. You will hire Halliburton to do this. And sometimes they simply say, you know, here's $100 million. Please clean up this lake. And if that's the case, then the president looks at the job and sometimes he'll appoint a commission to do it or he'll hire a company to do it. Or he'll issue an executive order saying, okay, here's how you're going to clean up the lake. First, you get a whole bunch of sponges, and then you run those sponges around the top of the lake, and then you take them over to another lake, and you wring them out, and you bring them back, you know, whatever. And that's what executive orders are for. They're the president saying, this is how I'm going to do something that Congress has already given me the power and authority to do. Period. Full stop. The president cannot say, I'm going to decide to clean up the lake and spend $100 million doing it, because he has no authority to spend money and he has no authority to raise taxes. It's one of the reasons why I find it so bizarre that these Republicans are running around trying to blame this deficit on President Obama or President Bush, for that matter. It's Congress that has the sole power to raise taxes and spend money. And establish laws within which those taxes can be raised and that money can be spent or borrowed. So anyhow, President Obama is issuing 23 different executive orders. They're basically saying things like telling the Department of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, or actually the CDC was the one. He said, we're going to ask the Centers for Disease Control to, like, you know, figure out what's going on with gun violence. You know, are there patterns here? Are there things that we can learn from this? Is it, you know, I mean, you know, their job is to look out for the health and safety of Americans. Just a few of the quotes. Congressman Louis Gohmert. It's not something a constitutional president would do. Oh, wait a minute. The president was elected by the Electoral College. That's in the Constitution. He is a constitutional president. What? Yeah, don't expect logic from Louis Gohmert. Marco Rubio. President Obama is again abusing his power. Right. Marco Rubio just wants to be president so bad he can taste it. Congressman Steve Stockman. Barack Obama is an existential threat to this nation. Daryl Issa, the richest or second richest guy in the House of Representatives, former small-time crook. Imperial behavior. Congressman Paul Brown took it even a step further. He says he's a dictator. And, of course, Rince Priebus, the head of the RNC, the guy in charge of the Republican Party, you know, the party that flipped the stars upside down, replaced the five-pointed star with the little star at the top, like the one on your Christmas tree kind of thing. You know, he took that star and flipped it upside down so it's like the star that the guys from the Church of Satan worship. By the way, yesterday, the Satan worshipers, there actually is a Satan worshiping church down in Florida. And they went to Tallahassee to have a rally to thank Governor Rick Scott for pushing through a piece of legislation that says that kids in school can pray. Now, kids in school can already pray. I mean, but, you know, the school can actually involve itself in this. Because they, you know, hey, they're evangelical. They want more people worshiping Satan. And, you know, given that the Republican Party flipped the stars upside down, I guess that makes perfect sense. So you got Steve Stockman, Trey Riddell, Republican from Florida. He says, and this is a lie, by the way, that one of Obama's executive orders is to, quote, ban guns, end quote. Sorry, it's a lie. Louis Gohmert, you know, I shared that with the Ed Meese, you know, the porn warped his brain. So what do you think? You think this is, you know, it's like Daryl Issa has been trying so hard to find something that he can impeach the president over. Because, you know, after all, it's his second term, you know, Democratic president, second term. When was the last time that happened? Let's see. Lyndon Johnson, well, now his second term actually was not really a second term because his first term was only half a term. Jimmy Carter didn't have a second term. Jack Kennedy didn't have a second term. He got assassinated. Harry Truman had a second term, but that was not quite a second term because he had a first term that was only half a term because Franklin Roosevelt died. I guess, you know, in the 20th century, the presidents that had a second term were FDR, who had a second, third, and fourth, and Bill Clinton. And with FDR, they actually tried to hire a Marine general, Smedley Butler, to lead an armed revolution against him, an insurrection. And with Bill Clinton, of course, they tried to impeach him. So now we've got a third Republican or Democratic president with a second term. Of course, impeach him.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
There's a certain point at which you look at the Republican Party with their upside-down stars and their bizarre thing, and you just say, have you guys no shame or no intelligence? Isn't this incredible? Isn't this absolutely incredible? Here, it was since Taft. President Taft was the last president to issue so few executive orders. The NRA says, hey, let's put armed guards at the schools. The president says, okay, fine. I'm signing an executive order that's going to make more armed guards for schools. About a third of all our schools have armed guards right now. including Columbine, when the shooting happened. Didn't do so much for that, right? Including Virginia Tech, when the shooting happened. Armed guard didn't do so much. But one of the things we do know about armed guards at schools is that you see a radical increase, actually a 500% increase in the number of students who get arrested and sent off to juvenile detention and end up with a criminal record and start the path down the road to prison. I'm not sure it's such a good idea. But, you know, hey, the NRA wants it done. The president says, okay, let's do it. You know, if the school wants an armed guard, we'll give it to them. And now you got these Republicans saying, let's impeach the guy. Let's impeach the guy. It's amazing. EJ in Lansing, Michigan. Hey, EJ, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how's it going for you?
Great.
Well, first off, I want to make the comment that I think the Republican Party needs to seriously sit down at the table, put their head on their desk, and take a little nap and grow up.
It ain't going to happen, EJ. That's not, you know,
I know
they...
it's not going to happen, but it's just sickening because you know, I'm a Democrat, and I had no love lost for W. But I mean, at least nobody, to my knowledge, really talked about impeaching him. Even he, and he did some pretty vile things.
Yeah.
But it's just sad. I mean,
well, I got to tell you, EJ, what the Republicans are doing is actually, if you look at the world in which they live, which is, you know, they're funded by billionaires. Their campaigns are funded by billionaires. They take, you know, their money from large corporations that lobby them and fly them all over the world and give them free trips and all kinds of goodies. And when they leave Congress, any member of the House of Representatives, starting pay is about $1 million a year as a lobbyist. Member of the Senate, starting pay is around $2 million a year as a lobbyist. And their senior staff members, starting pay is around $300,000 a year as a lobbyist. So, you know, everything that they're doing is absolutely smart, intelligent, and consistent when you understand, you know, the world in which they live and you know, what their opportunities are. So I would say that they would say to you, they have already grown up, they understand the real world, and they're siding with the billionaires to hell with the working people. But, EJ, your point is well taken. Thank you for the call. Steve in Scio, Oregon, says you disagree with me about what?
This circular firing squad you're forming up.
Which circular firing squad? I'm attacking Republicans who are attacking the president for signing executive orders to make, you know, guns less.
I've been listening. I know what you're doing.
Okay.
But the result is going to be hurting all of our progressive causes.
Why?
Gun control is not going to fly. It's a big distraction, and it's going to hurt our causes. It's going to hurt all the things that are important, and we're doing it for nothing.
Well, I respectfully disagree with you, and so do the polls.
Okay, fine. I'll tell you what. If the Democrats and the president had campaigned, if this whole discussion had taken place in October and November, we would have a Republican Senate and we would have a Republican president.
I don't think so. I really don't think so.
If you
look at the polls, Steve, you will find that the vast majority of not just Americans, but of NRA members are in favor of these common sense steps that the president's suggesting. Steve, thanks for sharing your opinion. Shana in Reuther Glen, Virginia. Hey, Shana.
Hi, Tom. I'm a big fan of yours. Thank you so much for staying on this issue. I wanted to express some of my concerns. I don't think that President Obama went far enough. Last night I read through what the executive actions were, and they're just purely enforcement or informing of existing laws.
That's right. That's because that's all he can do. You know, a president can only act within the context of existing law. He can't make law. That's the job of the legislature, of the House of Representatives and the Senate.
Well, I think that there's a really large, active campaign of disinformation from the gun lobby. They're spreading a lot of fear and hysteria where people feel like their guns are going to be taken from them.
Yeah.
And I really want the public to respond by contacting their representatives and making sure that the polls bear out. I'm concerned that those who are lukewarm about gun violence control, we'll just lose momentum. They'll listen to the gun lobby rhetoric that...
I think increasingly, Shana, the gun lobby is being viewed as the crackpots, as the lunatic fringe of America. America is waking up. It's very clear that we are waking up. And, you know, we're waking up in a whole variety of ways. We're becoming more tolerant. We're not, you know, the bigotry against gays is no longer, you know, popular. In fact, it's you know, actively engenders disgust, the bigotry. And I think people are saying enough with the guns already. Shana, thank you for the call. And thanks for sharing that. Steve in Haymarket, Virginia. Hey, Steve, you got a minute to the break.
Okay. I think it's funny that the, gun running president, who sent, 50,000, that caused 50,000 deaths in Mexico with his Fast and Furious thing and allowed the Benghazi ambassador to be defenseless.
Steve, you've been watching too much Fox News. The president did not send any guns to Mexico whatsoever. The state of Arizona, you got an argument about Fast and Furious. You need to talk to Jan Brewer, because the state of Arizona has laws on the books that say that if you walk into a gun store and want to buy 50 AK-47s, as long as you swear to the gun store seller that they're for your own personal use, you can walk out of the store. As soon as you walk out of the store, you can decide, oh, actually, they're not for my own personal use. I changed my mind, and you can sell them to the guy with the pickup truck who's going to drive them down to Mexico. And that's what's been going on. These Mexican drug lords have been hiring shills who are U.S. citizens to buy these guns for them. And all Fast and Furious was doing was tracking those guns to try and figure out what the pipeline and pathways were and who the people were. Unfortunately, because of the law in Arizona that Jan Brewer and her buddies passed, they couldn't arrest these people. You got to stop watching Fox, dude.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I mean, it's like eating too much candy rots your teeth, you know? It's like there's an analogy there. I think you can figure out for yourself. Yeah. Welcome back. Fair and slowly, slightly unbalanced, the Tom Hartman Program. Well, this is interesting. Tommy Christopher, the White House correspondent for Mediaite.com, Tucker Carlson's website, Mediaite.com, posted the video of my rant about how the Second Amendment was ratified in order to satisfy the delegates from Virginia, specifically Patrick Henry, George Mason, and James Madison, who authored it, so that to reassure the Georgia and South Carolinians that their slave patrol militias would be able to remain intact. And there's a whole bunch of people just going hysterical attacking me over there at Mediaite.com. So if you're one of those folks who likes to participate in or read those kinds of things, check it out. It's hysterical. And, of course, the article's up over at truthout.org and at alternate.com. Chuck in Mosier, Oregon. Hey, Chuck, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I forget what you said the exact word was, but Ed Meese, when he saw the pornography, his mind was what?
You know, I don't remember how he characterized it. I remember what had happened, but it was words to the effect of it would rot your brain or, you know, twist your mind or something like that. Yeah.
Right. I'm just wondering, maybe that's required viewing for Republicans now to get their brain warped up and twisted up so that they can carry on the way they do, because, you know, I mean, it's right next to pornographic every day when you listen to you, and the next thing they come up with is just worse than the last, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it is pretty strange. So, yeah, the Republicans have been too busy watching porn to actually know what's going on in the world. Could be, and, you know, who knows. Chuck, thanks for the call. Frank in Vermontville, Michigan. Hey, Frank, Vermontville. I didn't know there was a town named that.
Yeah, it's got about 700 people in it, so...
Cool. So you believe that Democrats trying to bring some rationality to, you know, like the assault weapon ban is going to hurt the Democratic Party. You agree with the guy who called earlier and said that?
Yes, I do, because I'm an independent and I'm a little upset with the Republicans. So I've been leaning towards the Democrats. I've been voting that way for about 10 years. This one issue will push me back to the Republican Party.
So you think it's okay for felons to buy guns?
No. But the assault weapon ban? No, I'm not for that. I don't have a problem with background checks. I have no problem with that.
Right.
I have a problem with telling a law-abiding citizen he cannot own a semi-automatic weapon based on its appearance or look.
Well, it's not just appearance or look. It's the ability to have a clip that you can remove and reinsert rapidly. If you're out duck hunting or deer hunting and you discharge your rifle or your shotgun, you're gonna, you know, when you go through however many rounds it has, you're gonna have to reload it. Whereas if you have a military style weapon, you just pop the clip out and pop a new clip in. Now I realize you can do that with pistols, and they're not characterizing pistols as weapons of war, but that's the major differentiator for rifles, as far as I know.
To classify an AR-15 as a military assault weapon, it is not a military assault weapon. And to go out to the range, which I do with a 20, 30-round magazine and shoot, it's enjoyable. It is fun.
Oh, I've done it myself. Nobody's saying that you shouldn't be able to go out to the range and rent one of those things and fire it away at a target all day long. But why do you need to own it?
Because that's what makes us America. This is what makes us American, is okay. We have the right to weapons like
okay.
that.
I think it'd be a lot of fun to fire a shoulder-fired rocket launcher, you know, and watch a car explode. But I can't do that.
Oh, I guess if he went smiley, he probably could. But
yeah, well, see, that's the thing. At some point, we have to draw some reasonable lines. And when we see over and over and over again Americans being basically slaughtered by weapons of war in the hands of civilians, I think it's time to say enough already. Weapons of war should be with our warriors. And you know, if you want to do target practice or you want – actually, if you want to even use – I think if you want to fire a shoulder-fired rocket, you know, launcher, that you ought to be able to do that on a range if you rent it, if the range is well regulated. But you know, I can't do that. But you know, I'm pretty liberal when it comes. And I don't mean liberal like politically liberal. I mean, you know, like I'm pretty accepting of all kinds of wild weapons being able to be used in a controlled, regulated, legal environment. But in terms of taking the thing home where my 15-year-old might borrow it out of my bedroom, no thanks. I mean, you know, keep in mind, this kid, the first person he killed was his mom, and he took her weapons to that school and killed those kids. So, Frank, I just have to respectfully disagree with you. Thanks for the call, though. Daniel in Longview, Washington. Hey, Daniel.
Hello, Tom. My comment is, I called Jamie Herrera Butler today and asked her two questions.
She is your member of Congress?
By the way, she's a rubber stamp for the Republicans, I feel.
Okay.
But anyway, I asked her, I said, if you feel what our president, Barack Obama, is doing is unconstitutional, then why would you vote against raising the debt ceiling? Because the 14th Amendment says we will pay our bills. So
right.
How could you compromise yourself?
Right.
That's my comment.
And did you get a response?
Well, I call her on account of you, by the way. I call her probably once to twice a month.
Uh-huh.
And I always get her people.
Right.
And they always say, well, we've never discussed that. I'll get back to you. We'll, you know, they never have an answer.
Well, at least you've registered your perspective, and that's a good and important thing. Daniel, thank you for the call, and good on you for performing a civic service, contacting your member of Congress. They don't hear from any of us enough. Thank you. Jacqueline in Lakeside, California. Hey, Jacqueline.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you?
I would feel better as an American. Something has truly been lost in this country when a citizen can hear over and over the constant debasing and disrespect of our president.
Yeah.
When did we become that kind of people?
Well, you know, in the last 100 years, we have had three Democratic presidents who've had two terms or more. Franklin Roosevelt, and in his second term, the Republicans and some of the big corporatists tried to hire Marine General Smedley Butler to lead an armed revolution, literally a coup d'etat, and take him out of the White House.
Oh, yes,
Smedley Butler blew the whistle on them.
I remember reading that in college.
Yep.
What really blows me away is that the Republican Party, they're smart, intelligent, articulate, but they have no common sense.
Well, they have no conscience,
let's
say.
Very dangerous.
But so the first Republican to have a second term in the last 100 years, that was FDR. So they tried to hire, you know, a Marine general to do a coup d'etat. That didn't work out so well. So the second president who got a Democratic president who got a second term, which was Bill Clinton, they actually impeached him in the House of Representatives. And now we have the third Democratic president in 100 years to get a second term. And they are fixing to try to, you know, they went through Fast and Furious and Benghazi. I mean, Daryl Issa keeps looking for things they can impeach him over. Now they're going to try and impeach him over issuing executive orders, which are completely within his legal purview, that would, allow the Centers for Disease Control to learn more about, you know, how guns are being used in America, things like that. So, Jacqueline, I agree with you. It's not just disrespect. It's that Republicans, since they represent the rich and the powerful, they feel entitled to basically run things. And when they don't run everything, it gets them really, really upset. And, you know, another variation on that is if you can't win an election, you rig an election. Republicans in Pennsylvania have proposed election rigging, bills. A bill was proposed yesterday to pass out electoral votes based on individual congressional districts so that Obama would have, you know, lost most of Pennsylvania in the last election. And had that been done in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin, you'd have President Romney right now, even though Obama won the election. So, Jacqueline, I'm with you. Thank you for the call. George in Ottawa, North Carolina. Hey, George.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Hey, I've heard you reference Smedley Butler twice. It should be mentioned historically that he was a two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner, and that two of the people who were in the consortium of businessmen who were aligned trying to hire him were J.D. Rockefeller and H. Prescott Bush. But that's
those are alleged. He never actually named names.
Okay. But my comment was this: the number one export of America is death and destruction. I mean, our number one export is military hardware.
Yes.
I would say that all by itself establishes a certain mindset. You combine that with movies and now video games.
That's actually our second number one export. Our number one export right now, and this is just in the last 2 years has this changed, but our number one export right now is gasoline and diesel fuel. Our number two export.
I'll defer to you.
Yeah, no, I'm serious. And you know why we export so much of it? To keep the price here high. The gas and oil companies, they're refining it like crazy here. And, you know, we pay to protect their shipping lanes to bring it over here from Saudi Arabia. And then we inhale all the poison when they refine it. And we pay for the cancers that causes. And then they export it to Great Britain and to Mexico and even to China. And we pay for those shipping lanes, and they make a profit. But you're absolutely right. Our number two export is military hardware, and that shouldn't be. Let's just leave it at that. That shouldn't be. It's a lousy way to run an economy. 45 minutes past. Skip it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And I got, you know, the people are with the president on this, and I am going to prove it during this show. Just stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Stephanie Miller on the line with us. StephanieMiller.com, star of the Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour, as well as the Stephanie Miller Show. SexyLiberal.com is the website. Hey, Stephanie.
Hi, Tom Hartman.
How are you?
Hey.
So you are coming to our city, our fair city here, Washington, D.C., the District of the Goddess.
Listen, honey, it's Tom Hartman's world. The rest of us just live in it. How we roll.
Isn't that sweet? So tell us where you're going to be and when, and tell us about the Sexy Liberal Tour.
Well, sweetness, it is going to be at the Warner Theater, and it's going to be Sexy Liberal Palooza. I tell you what, the whole gang is coming. Curtis and Jim and Jackie Schechner are coming. They're going to open the show, and it's all four Sexy Liberals, Hal Sparks and Aisha Tyler and John Fugelsang, and we have two huge surprise celebrity guests on panel. And there'll be luminaries in the audience as well. I hope one of them will be you.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure Louise and I are going to show up, so that
Woo-hoo!
That should be fun. We're looking forward to it. And when is this?
Yeah. But it's we're taking our victory lap for the Obama victory. We're in for inauguration weekend.
There you go. Oh, so it's this weekend.
Yeah. It's this Saturday, January 19th.
Whoa, that's going to be great.
So, yeah, you can go to sexyliberal.com, sexyliberal on Facebook or Twitter, and get the link. And I think there's just a very few tickets left.
Okay, great. So get over to sexyliberal.com and check it out. Stephanie Miller, the host of the Sexy Liberal Comedy, and you've been running this thing all over the country for about a year and a half now.
Yes, they're trying to kill me. You know, you know the guy that owns the show that's trying to kill me for life insurance money. That guy, Ron. We've been doing this almost 2 years. It just sort of took on a life of its own. But, you know, and we have people that have been to, like, you know, we have Steph heads, Tom. They've been to 7, 8. They follow the show around the country. It's, you know, because it's always different. It's topical depending on what's going on. And, you know, we do Q&A, and it's always different celebrities on panel. And so it's kind of a living, breathing thing, Tom.
Oh, you have birthed an organism here of some kind.
And it's filthy, as you know. It's the radio show without the FCC.
Yeah, there you go. So you can say the things you really mean or the things you really want to say. Okay, Stephanie Miller, check it out, sexyliberal.com. Stephanie, thanks for dropping by and sharing the word with people.
Thanks, Sexy. Speaking of sexy liberals.
Thank you. Great talking with you.
See you this weekend.
Okay, we will. We'll see you this weekend.
Thanks, honey.
Stephanie Miller, sexyliberal.com. And that's just absolutely great. Jason in Pueblo, Colorado. Hey, Jason. Jefferson and the Second Amendment? What's up?
How's it going? You'd had a caller in earlier that was talking about what his viewpoint on what the Second Amendment was based on, what they put it in place for. You know, but if you look back at what Thomas Jefferson wrote, some of his quotes, one of his great ones is, the benefit of the Second Amendment is it's not going to be needed till somebody tries to take it from us.
Jefferson never said that. Jefferson never said that. There are a lot of things that are attributed to Jefferson that he never said, and I guarantee you that's one of them.
It's in one of his writings. But anyways, the fact is, even there's no sub-articles to the Second Amendment. Second Amendment states to form well-formed militias, to arm the people to protect themselves from foreign or domestic governments.
No, it doesn't say that either. And that was not included in the debates at the time. In fact, the major debates at the time of ratification of the Constitution had to do with whether the militias of the southern states, which were used as slave patrols, could be taken out of state by the northern states as a way of allowing slave uprisings, which terrified the southern plantation owners. And that's why James Madison changed the language.
Have you read the Federalist Papers?
Yes, I have, actually.
Thomas Jefferson.
Jefferson never participated in the Federalist Papers. The Federalist Papers were written by John Jay, Alexander Hamilton, and James Madison.
Like I said, have you read them or read anything written by Thomas Jefferson himself on why they put the Second Amendment in place?
Yes, sir, I have. In fact, I wrote a book called What Would Jefferson Do? Based on having read for about a 2.5-year period, a 20-volume collection of Jefferson's writings.
Either way, it was based on arming the people of the country to protect themselves. That's the whole point to it. There's nothing.
No, the main point in Jefferson's mind for the Second Amendment was to prevent a standing army. And most of the Northerners who were in favor of the Second Amendment, they were doing so because they felt that a standing army during time of peace represented a danger to the Republic, because they had seen over and over again in Europe countries overthrown by their militaries, military coups. So they wanted to have local militia. In the southern states, they wanted to have their slave patrol militias. In Georgia, for example, in 1755, they actually passed a law requiring any white man between the ages of 16 and 45 to be a member of the slave patrol militias and to once a month inspect the quarters of all the black people in their county to make sure that there were no weapons. And if they found any slaves who were not on their plantations, those slaves were to receive 20 lashes. It was actually written into the law. That's what the militias were about in the South. Jason, seriously, check out your history. You can go over to truthout.org. I got an article about it. You can read it. The links go right through. There are links that go right through to the actual debate. The actual words of Patrick Henry, Alexander Hamilton, I'm sorry, not Alexander Hamilton, George Mason and James Madison. You can click right through to the, on the link and get right there to their actual debate. Check it out, Jason. Armin in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Armin, got a minute to the end of the hour. It's yours. What's up?
Well, why don't you make the biggest point? And the biggest point is, if you go back the last 40 years, both political parties, through bipartisanship, are nothing more than a tag team.
I don't think that's true. I think there are very significant differences between the two political parties, Armin.
NAFTA, GATT, WTO.
You will not find. I can give you. There are 90 Democrats, members of the Democratic Progressive Caucus, who are opposed to all those things you just listed. You will not be able to find one Republican.
Bailing out New York again. $1.4 trillion's not enough. They had to have their $60 billion. So the gangsters in New York could keep on rolling. It's bipartisanship. Absolutely.
Okay.
It's a tag team.
Yeah.
And this
I got
is
it.
All Obama.
A pox on all their houses. There's no difference at all. Armin, I'm sorry. You're wrong. You're just plain old flat out wrong. There are areas where you and I agree and we disagree with both Democrats and Republicans. But to say that there's no difference between those two parties is just plain old flat out wrong. Anyhow, we're going to be debating. What are we going to be debating? Jamie Weinstein. Oh, the economic vampires. This is going to be good.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the second hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you, and Jamie Weinstein is on the line with me. He is the senior editor, the Daily Caller, co-author with Will Ron of The Lizard King, dailycaller.com, of course, the website for the Daily Caller. Jamie, welcome back.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you with us. Two things. First, something real quickly. Before we get into this debate about Social Security and these extremists at the Business Roundtable who want to raise the eligibility age to 70, I'm wondering if you can explain to me, when Rand Paul says he wants to nullify the president's executive orders to, like, you know, the Centers for Disease Control to do research on, you know, gun violence, what's he talking about?
I'm not sure. We'll have to see. I'm not quite clear what he's referring to, but I guess I'm as anxious as you are to see what he's referring to.
I have never heard of any member of Congress Congress could change the laws within which the president is issuing the executive orders and render them null, I suppose. But one person nullify it sounds like, you know, language from the 1850s.
Well, I don't know what he's referring to, but as you will, I'll evaluate what he puts forward.
Okay. Well, if you find out, would you let me know?
Sure, he's a pretty smart guy. I disagree with him on a lot, but we'll see what he has in mind.
Okay. Now, here we have 200 of the richest CEOs in America, bunch of by and large old white guys, average income around $13.7 million a year, the Business Roundtable. This is their little club. Jon Snow actually is probably the most famous former president of the Business Roundtable. He was the Treasury Secretary, was he not, or Commerce Secretary under George W. Bush?
Treasury Secretary.
Treasury, yeah, that's what I thought. And, you know, he was formerly the president of the Business Roundtable. So now they're out pitching this idea, this extremist idea, that we should raise the Social Security retirement age to 70. Do you really want 70-year-old bricklayers, fixing your street out in front of your house?
Well, there's, I think, several points here. You call it extremist, but I believe it's, I haven't seen the exact details of the plan. I've read the articles you've read on it. It sounds similar to the plan that President's Commission on the debt kind of came up with. So I'm not sure that
the President's Commission, if you're talking about Simpson Bowles, they didn't come up with a plan. There was no official finding that came out of Simpson Bowles, as you well know, Jamie.
The majority of the committee voted for a plan. They needed a supermajority to actually.
So there was no plan.
But the two leaders of it, along with most of the people on the panel, a Republican and the Democrat.
The two multimillionaire bankster hacks. Yeah, okay.
Right, sure. But I'm not sure. But let's get to your point. Yeah. Is that you're worried about those who, you know, do actually intense labor.
Well, that's only one of three concerns I have.
Okay, but in the outline of the plan that I read, and these are only articles, I'd like to see the details of it. It mentions, as a lot of plans for raising the age of Medicare and Social Security do, is that there would be some accommodation made for those who are construction workers, for instance, who have physically intensive jobs, which is obviously different than, for instance, you and me, who aren't going out there in the hot sun every day and building something. So they're well aware of that, but they're also aware that our long-term fiscal problem is almost entirely to deal with entitlements. As Nate Silver, you know, the liberal New York Times blogger who was very heralded during the for predicting the election, pointed out yesterday when he got deep in the weeds with our long-term fiscal
problem. If you're talking about entitlements like Medicare, yeah, the Republicans putting Medicare Part D in there that requires the government not to negotiate drug prices,
that
you know,
is
the $600 billion gift to the pharmaceutical industry. But Social Security is solvent for the next 20 years easily, and it'll pay 80% of benefits forever. And if we simply lifted the cap so that Bill Gates paid the same amount in Social Security, same percentage of his income as you and me, there would, you know, Social Security would be solvent forever.
Well, I don't think you can talk about the Social Security problem without the Medicare problem. Obviously, the Medicare
problem.
They're
two completely different programs.
It's much bigger. And the entitlement problem, I think you can easily get a fix on Social Security than you can on Medicare. But the fact of the matter is that when Social Security was implemented in 1935, if you lived to 65, you had about a 14-year life expectancy afterwards. Now, if you live to 65, you have about a 20-year life expectancy afterwards.
So the average life expectancy in the United States is 74, isn't it, right now? It hasn't changed that substantially since then. The only cohort that's actually living longer now.
Stop you, Tom, for a second. That's according to the CBO. The CBO says that in 1935, if you lived to the age of 65 when Medicare was was instituted, you lived about 14 years. You got benefits for about 14 years.
You mean
today, if you live to 65 in Social Security, if you live to 65, you get benefits for 20 years. Okay. That's the life.
Well, let's stipulate that. What is wrong with people working their asses off their entire life until they're 65 and then saying, okay, I'm going to enjoy myself for a couple of years? What is wrong with that? Especially since we paid into that. You know, I've been paying into Social Security since I was 16 years old. You telling me when I'm 65, I shouldn't be able to draw it?
Well, I think, Tom, that you have to face a reality here is that Social Security and Medicare, our entitlement programs, face an unsustainable long-term liability.
And they're both easily fixed.
They're not easily fixed.
They certainly are easily fixed.
You cannot tax the rich, Tom, enough to pay for
it. I'm not talking about taxing the rich. Social Security, do away with the cap. That not only will produce a surplus for Social Security that could be applied to Medicare, but then with Medicare, if you simply said that Medicare can negotiate with the pharmaceutical companies so they can buy aspirin at the same price the Department of Defense does, you know, at a hundredth of a penny a pill instead of $5 a pill like they're required to pay right now, then you've solved your problem.
You are a party of one if you think that solves the Medicare and Social Security problem.
I am not a party of one.
Yeah, this is not a, I mean, I, there are not, these are not serious solutions on the table to fix Social Security and Medicare. You cannot tax your way into solving these problems. As Nate Silver noted yesterday, no conservative, the graph, the chart is going off the charts, with the way healthcare spending is going up. Over the next 10, 20, 30 years, these are going to eat up more and more and more of our budget.
Assuming we continue to be in recession, assuming we continue to have the number of unemployed people that we have, assuming that we don't fix either of these programs,
even if our growth rate is what it has been over the last 30 years.
Jamie, you and I both know what's really going on here is that these 200 CEOs of the Business Roundtable, A, they're going to live longer than most of the rest of us because the people who are living longer these days are wealthy white people who have more than six figures in their annual income. It's not working people in America. Their average lifespan has not changed substantially in the last 30 or 40 years. But wealthy people, it certainly has. It's gone up 2 or 3 years.
Secondly, they want to get their hands
on this money. These are government programs that are highly successful, that people love and that work. And Republicans their heads are exploding over the fact that there are government programs that people like.
This is simply fantasy talk. They don't want to get their hands on their money. What they understand is, as anybody who looks at the budget understands, is that we face a long-term fiscal challenge. Of my numbers I've seen is $80 trillion unfunded liabilities. That has to be fixed.
If you want to go out 75 years.
The money doesn't exist by taxing the rich. You have to institute changes. You have to institute reform. And I say kudos to the Business Roundtable for actually doing something that President Obama hasn't done, is come forward with a plan.
Instead of raising the retirement age to 70, Jamie, why don't we lower it to 60? What that'll do is suck about 6 or 8 million people out of the job market and reduce unemployment down to around 3, 3.5, 4%, which will cause competition for workers to go up, which will drive up wages, which will increase tax collections, which will fund Social Security and Medicare.
We could lower it to 50 and bring out the money tree to pay for the bill. I don't know.
I think 50 is the point at which you'd see diminishing returns. Probably 55 is the point at which you'd see diminishing returns. But you can do the math on lowering it to 60. It actually helps. I mean, this is the same thing as when France lowered their work week from 40 hours to 35 hours. What happened? Their unemployment rate went down almost 2 points.
Yeah, well,
revenue went up.
Well, just because an unemployment rate goes down doesn't mean the economy is humming along. You could have everyone
in
full
collection goes up. More people working.
Yeah. Well, Tom, I don't think that most of the experts I've seen think that's a suitable theory.
Well, we have different experts, Jamie.
Perhaps we do.
Okay, Jamie Weinstein, senior editor over at the Daily Caller, dailycaller.com. And be sure to check out his book, The Lizard King. It's a hoot. Thanks, Jamie.
Thank you, Tom.
Good talking with you. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So do you agree with these 200 multimillionaires, CEOs of the nation's largest and most predacious companies, that everybody should work till 70? Okay, for those of you, I've gotten two calls now so far in today's program. They were both in the last hour. People who say, I'm a Democrat, and the president shouldn't be doing this because it's going to hurt the Democrats in the next election, you know, having kind of sensible gun reform laws or changes or executive orders. You know, the president's not proposing to take away anybody's guns. He's not going to come knocking on your door or anything like that. I mean, there's this enforcing laws that are already on the books is basically the essence of what he's suggesting. So the Pew Research Center did a poll on it. They said, what do you think about this, what the president is proposing, or actually doing, what he did yesterday? 85% of Americans are in favor of background checks for private and gun show sales. Close the gun show loophole. 80% of Americans are in favor of preventing people with mental illness from purchasing guns. 67% of people are in favor of a federal database to track gun sales. Notice all these numbers are over 50%, and that's where you win an election, is over 50%. 58% of Americans are in favor of banning semi-automatic weapons. And that's pretty huge, because he's not even proposing to ban semi-automatic weapons. I mean, you know, there's a whole lot of pistols that are semi-automatics, a lot of rifles that are semi-automatics. The proposal is to ban military-style semi-automatic weapons. It's a world of difference. And so when you ask that question, ban assault-style weapons, 55% of Americans are in favor of that. Ban high-capacity magazines, 54% of Americans are in favor of that. Ban online sale of ammunition. Now, that's one where I thought, you know, probably the majority of Americans would say, no, you ought to be able to buy your bullets from Amazon.com. No, 53% of Americans say, yes, ban the online sale of ammunition. Why? Because, you know, your average 12-year-old with dad's credit card could buy this stuff online. I mean, if they can get to porn online, they can certainly get the bullets online. Do you really want that going on? Ray in McHenry, Illinois, listening on WCPT. Hey, Ray, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. One thing, every time they do things like that with the age 70 for Social Security, it's always about finding ways to funnel more money to themselves. That's all it's about. That's the hidden agenda all the time. And because if you're sitting there thinking, I can't retire till I'm 70 on Social Security, you're going to think, I better get something private to help me, you know, because I'll never make it that long. So it's just it's a scheme. But the other thing I wanted to say is I've been listening to these debates now, traveling across the country. Plus, I've been hearing all these commercials, people advertising for all these different big magazines and stuff that they have on sale before you get them, before they're banned. But the other thing is, we have the First Amendment, and yet if I say the F word on the radio right now, there'll be all kinds of consequences for that. Janet Jackson flashed a boob,
yeah.
And there was all kinds of consequences.
The consequences and, would be mostly to me, by the way, Ray, so please don't.
Well, I know. And then the other thing is we have the right to assemble, but you have to get a permit to do that
yes.
in all these places. And yet, when it comes to the Second Amendment, we can't do anything.
Right.
Why not?
Well, and not only that, there's no codicil in the First Amendment. There's nothing that stipulates a regulation of free speech. It doesn't say, you know, in order to have well-regulated public discourse, Congress shall not, regulate speech or something like that. It's just basically, you know, free speech is there in the First Amendment. The Second Amendment is the only one of the Bill of Rights where the word regulated even exists. And it's right there in the first part, the first five words of the Second Amendment. So, yeah, I'm with you, Ray. It's a good point and well said. Thank you very much. Jesse in Morris, Illinois. Hey, Jesse.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great. You're a construction worker, and you think you can work until you're 70?
No, I don't, buddy. I'm a younger guy. I'm only 26, mm-hmm. but I work with guys, you know, every day in, day out, that are late 50s, 60, and hoping to retire when they're 62. And 62 is a far race, you know? Working construction, getting up every day, working 10, 12 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yep.
You can't do that when you're 65 years old.
Well, the Republicans want you to do that till you're 70.
Right.
So.
And I'm sure that same group of businessmen that had this idea probably wouldn't agree with union workers either, so...
Yeah, well, and actually, here's some of these people include the CEOs of Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, Sanofi Aventis, a drug company, Abbott Laboratories, the Tenet Hospital System, Cardinal Health, Express Scripts, CVS Caremark, WellPoint, the average income, Bank of America, AT&T, American Express, Bayer, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, Dow Chemical, J.P. Morgan. I can see where all of these could benefit from this. The drug companies, you know, hey, and people get injured on the job, and there's, you know, if they're working at 68 years old, working construction, more likely to get injured. So you're going to sell more drugs to them, or certainly a lot more, you know, pain relievers. And the banks, the banksters, you know, if they can privatize Medicare, the banksters are going to make out like bandits. So Jesse, absolutely right on. I'm totally with you. Ryan in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Ryan. You want to talk about assault weapons?
Thanks for taking my call, Tom. Basically, I hear so much about the assault weapons ban, and the debate seems to be centered around assault weapons. And to me, it almost seems a little irrelevant given how many deaths assault weapons cause. It seems to me that the main target should be handguns, since by far the majority of gun deaths are from handguns. I also don't really see how assault weapons are even any more dangerous than a handgun as far as the rate of fire, the size of the bullet.
Right. Personally, you know, I know you can get high-capacity clips for some handguns as well. I think that's where we should be focusing, because you're not going to be able to stop somebody who is determined to kill somebody. I mean, if anything, that was the lesson of the Kennedy assassination or Martin Luther King's assassination or the attempt to shoot Ronald Reagan. I mean, there were literally five armed guys standing within 10 feet of Ronald Reagan when John Hinckley walked up and shot him. Five of them. Armed guys. And, you know, Secret Service guys, local police officers, security guy, and still he got shot. So you can't stop somebody. But if somebody, you know, is pulling off, can squeeze off 8 or 9 rounds, that's a whole different thing than if they can squeeze off 40 or 50 rounds. So you can limit the damage. And I think that at the very least, we should be attending to that. Brian, thanks a lot for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So where do you start in this society? Where do we start if we want to say, okay, we're going to try to limit gun violence? Where do we start? Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, it's Thursday. Let's get geeky, our geeky science moment. Over the last 80 years, something really interesting has been happening around our planet. From about 1930 to today, there's been a consistent increase in IQ test scores literally all over the world. And while many explanations have been proposed to help explain this phenomenon, which is known as the Flynn effect, none have really stuck. Nobody really knows how or why. But now, thanks to a new study and surprising new information about the universe, scientists and researchers may be closer to explaining the Flynn effect. According to a computer simulation run by a group of researchers, the universe, I'm talking about like, you know, the entire creation, everything, it's growing. You know, it's expanding, it's growing, it's getting more complex continuously. It may be growing the same way a giant, it may be growing like a giant human brain, basically. The study was published in the journal Nature Scientific Reports, and it suggests that some undiscovered fundamental laws of physics may govern and explain the growth of various systems, both large and small. Like the electrical firing between neurons in the brain, the growth of social networks, and even the expansion of galaxies. Studies in the past have shown that brain circuits and the internet look really similar, but despite the similarity, nobody's been able to develop an equation to predict how computer networks and brain circuits or social networks grow over time. But using Einstein's equations of relativity, physicists and researchers can retrace the universe's birth and growth since the Big Bang and see how it's expanded outward ever since. And so this team of researchers on the study decided to see if the universe's accelerating growth could give us any insight into the ways that brain circuits and social networks expand. Team created a computer simulation that broke down the early universe into the smallest possible units, or quanta, of space-time, smaller even than subatomic particles. That simulation then linked all the quanta in a massive celestial network that were causally related, all the quanta that were causally related. As the simulation continued, it added more and more units of space-time to the history of the universe, and as a result, the network of the connections between matter and the galaxies also grew. When the researchers compared the universe's history of growth to that of social networks and brain circuits, they discovered that all of these networks expanded in pretty much the same way. Dmitry Kirokov, one of the lead researchers on the study, said that it is highly unlikely that this eerie similarity between networks as small as the brain and as large as the universe is just a coincidence. He says, he also says that, quote, for a physicist, it's an immediate signal that there is some missing understanding of how nature works, end quote. So what's the bottom line to all this? It now appears quite likely that there is some yet-to-be-discovered law that governs the way all networks grow, regardless of their size, whether it's a fly's brain, your or my brain, or the entire universe. But let's revisit the Flynn effect for a moment. For decades, the IQ of the world's population has been consistently increasing, and nobody can figure out why. Well, what if our intelligence and our consciousness are directly related to the universe? What if as the human race gets smarter as the universe grows larger and more complex? Could it be possible that we're all part of one massive brain known as the universe? And as it's getting more complicated and smarter, so are we. Twilight Zone music, right? I mean, very, very interesting. Okay, that was our thank you. That was our moment of geek, weekly geeky sound. My 3 minutes that I can play with on one of my favorite topics. Rodney in Chicago Heights, Illinois. You want to talk about gun control and the fear of it?
Well, yeah, but originally I called to find out which C-SPAN channel Brother West was going to be on today. But the gun control, the people with guns, I know quite a few of them, and you try to have an intelligent conversation, and you get pretty much the equivalent of them sticking their fingers in their ears and going, la, 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 la. But with the business roundtable, you know, hey, I'm 52 years old. I worked 25 years as doing heavy construction, bridge demolition, construction, and tunnel mining. You know, I'd like to take them out for a day, and 20% I'd probably kill. 50% would come around, and even though I'm half crippled up, the rest of them, you know, I could beat the dog's snot out of them.
Okay, Rodney, we will leave it at that. I can't endorse death threats, but. You know, I get it. It was tongue in cheek. Rod, Ron in Mays Landing, New Jersey. Hey, Ron, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Sam raising the retirement age to 70 sounds all well and good.
No, it doesn't.
I wanted to work till I was 65. Unfortunately, I was downsized when I was 61. And at 61, you're not finding anything. And
right.
I didn't find anything in my field and just got some busy work jobs until I was 65.
This is another reason why I think they should lower the retirement age to 60. It would actually generate more revenue for Social Security because you'd have more people employed and you'd have more people making more money because it would tighten the labor market. And so wages would go up and you'd see an increase in tax revenues and it would pay for itself. So, Ron, excellent point. Thank you for calling and making it. Ann in Sugar Grove, North Carolina. Hey, Ann. In Tucson, you got a story about Tucson?
Well, speaking of C-SPAN, the guy that asked before, when Tavis Smiley and Cornell West, that's on C-SPAN at 6:30 this evening.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. I didn't know that off the top of my head.
I'm a C-SPAN junkie. I'm semi-retired, and I watch so much C-SPAN and free speech and all that, Link TV. But for all the people that have their heads watching, their faces watching Fox, they need to watch C-SPAN a little bit more. Or begin watching it. I don't think any of them could find it. But there was a program last night, and they'll probably rerun it a couple more times, I'm sure. And it's a panel where there was the mayor of Philadelphia, the police chief of Minneapolis, Minnesota, a woman at Tucson who lost her adult son, and I forgot who the fourth person was. But it's an incredible panel to listen to their stories, to actually stop and listen.
On gun control.
And it's all in the gun control issue. And one of the things they talked about was in Tucson, those people were exercising their right to assemble and right of free speech. And so I'm like, well, when does the Second Amendment trump that one? And the other thing that happened there was a guy with a gun who came out of like a Walgreens or something, and there was so much chaos that he didn't know who to shoot or almost shot the person who tackled the guy who committed the crime.
Right.
You know, so this thing where everybody should be armed is like out, you know, is not,
we do not want bullets flying in crowds. Yeah.
Right. It's not realistic thinking. And then one quick thing on Rand Paul. I live down here in the Appalachian Mountains and he had a comment about mountaintop removal, which is a huge problem.
Sure.
In the Appalachian Mountains, and he said, oh, no one's going to miss a few hills here and there. He actually said that.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
I get a magazine, a newspaper called The Appalachian Voice, and it's got tons of information.
I would guess if he was being totally candid, the last half of that sentence would be just so long as some mine owners make a whole pile of money.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
oh, and speaking of the mine, the guy at Massey, the one where the 29 miners died, he got a measly 2 years.
Incredible. Incredible. And thank you for calling. Thank you for sharing the story. It's an excellent one. Randy in Ottawa, Iowa. Yeah. Am I saying that right, Randy?
I have two comments. One quick one on your geeky science fact. That would be my explanation would be parallel evolution between the human race and the universe.
See, I think we're connected. I think it's all one thing.
I do, too. And the other one is a point I wanted to make about a caller probably three or four back. He mentioned politicians and the lobby groups making money off of government. And what it boils down to, it's really simple. It's graft. The proponents of small government and the conservative movement, in which the gun lobby's in there as well, have grafted themselves onto government and created big government. And they've done it to make money and gain power. And it's pretty simple. If I can figure it out, almost anybody could grasp it, I would think.
There you go. Yeah, it's big government. They, you know, keeps the corn lobby going and all that for high fructose corn syrup. It's big government that allows Bill Gates to become a multi-billionaire by, you know, welfare queen by enforcing copyright and patent laws and Disney company and everything else. Yeah, I'm with you, Randy. Thanks a lot for the call. Dusty in Clinton Township, Michigan. Got a minute to the break, Dusty. It's yours.
Hi, Tom. Kudos to President Obama for passing the START. It's a start.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty obvious that some of those Republicans are puppets to the billionaires. I'm wondering, I know this sounds odd, is there a war, we're in a war and we didn't notice it? I mean, wars are always about the same things, for to get land, forced tribute, natural resources, water, and the, when they're, people are taking power, they always do the same thing. Propaganda, lots of rhetoric, take over the media, dehumanize, find
You're
every way they can
to
instill
program.
Fear
Visit
in people
and audio and video
hit people against each other.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think that there is a war, and I think it's the war of the billionaires against the rest of us. It's, you know, Warren Buffett said, there is class warfare, and my class, his class, he said, is, the billionaire class, is winning. So I'm with you, Dusty. Yeah, I think that there is. It's called class war. Thank you for the question.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
45 minutes past the hour. Also, TomHartman.com, free. You can get our newsletter with the links to every story I talk about all day long. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's check in with Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service for the news. The news brought to you, of course, by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com, where you can give a goat to help a rescued slave and receive a photo of your goat and the person that you helped. GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. Ellen, what's going on in the world?
Okay, well, there's a Republican retreat in Williamsburg, paid for by a lot of lobbyists. The
surprise,
Democrat one.
Surprise.
Democrat one is paid for probably by taxpayers, but in any case, yes, yeah. Lobbyists, and there is some socialization and all that kind of thing. In any case, House Budget Chair, former VP nominee, Paul Ryan, said that Republicans are actually weighing about doing a short-term debt solution. The White House is not very excited about that. They say we need to address this in the long term, but they are trying the softer Republican method of saying, well, you know, we probably will do something short term until we work it out, et cetera. Jay Carney said that, of course, the president would prefer to do something in the long front. But meanwhile, on that sort of same front, the pay freeze did come up for federal workers. There is a pay freeze. They decided not to vote a 0.05, a half of a percent is the best way to put it, half percent pay raise in April. And now the question is, what is going on? Now, it is true that Congress did not increase their pay this year, but they do get $174,000 a year.
Right. So, but this is affecting all federal workers, right?
Every federal worker, from the guy that, you know, runs the furnace in wherever to the most high-paid worker.
So federal workers are actually making less money this year because
they
got inflation running at two and change.
That's right. So they're actually losing. And it's not – the federal pay really ought to be at least – at the very least tied to inflation.
Yeah, you would think. Yeah.
Okay. More going on, gun control issues. It looks like, of course, they're still, you know, screaming and scrying about it. But it does look like even the right is going to agree on a universal gun background check. So the NRA can say, hey, we did something. And, of course, those of us on our side of the fence will say, well, at least they did that.
Yeah.
But that's about as far as I think we're going to get. I don't think we're going to get an assault weapons ban. That's sort of news from the Hill, and I was just there.
Interesting.
Okay. Now, it also looks like Senator Kerry, Senator Hagel's confirmation hearings are set. And it looks like Senator Kerry is going to go a week from Wednesday, or a week from Thursday, I guess, a week from today, January 24th, and Chuck Hagel it will be testifying the following week on January 31st before the Senate.
Okay.
So that's going to happen.
And will those votes be held on the day that the testimony is given, or
hard
is it a
to
few
say.
Days later?
Usually, if, you know, it depends when Harry Reid. It's really Harry Reid sending, and he's obviously going to set it at the most opportune time.
Right.
As you know, State of the Union is very late this year.
Yeah,
The latest it's ever been. I mean, I made arrangements to go to Grenada, and I'm not very happy about it, but that's life. Okay. There are some business leaders. They are looking at some changes in Social Security. What do you suppose those changes are, Business Roundtable? Well, Tom, I'm sure you don't have to do much guessing. They want to increase the age for beneficiaries of both programs, Social Security and Medicare, to 70. Right. Now, I think you've heard me say on the show many times, I'm missing an eye. I pay $2,041 a month for my health insurance. I'm 61 years old, right? Yeah. So what is somebody like me, and I think about it, okay, I've got, three and a half years till I hit Social Security. All right, it's a big...
And Medicare.
It's a Medicare. It's a big out-of-pocket expense, but I can do it for 3 years if I really need to. Could I do it till I'm 70? Well, that's a whole nother question.
Yeah.
So now they want to raise Medicare beneficiaries till 70 years old?
Yeah, this is nuts. And you're not doing the kind of job where you're on your feet all day long, or where you're carrying things. I mean,
And you and I lecture to college students. I always tell college students, be sure that you have a way of supporting yourself after 50. Find a small business, do something, because you will not have a job over 50.
Yeah, I think they ought to lower the retirement age from 65 to 60. What that would do is about half of the 60 to 65-year-olds would retire. You'd see unemployment go down to 3.5%, which would drive up wages. You'd have more people in the workforce. It would increase tax collections, and it would pay for itself.
I want you to write a book with that title.
Okay. It's actually a chapter in my book, Rebooting the American Dream. There's a chapter about that.
Right. Well, we'd like to publish that one. Okay. First Lady now has her own Twitter account, at FLOTUS.
Oh, really?
Yes. She just...
As in First Lady
of the United States. Just States, like the FLOTUS, president is called POTUS, this is called FLOTUS. Energy Secretary Chu, has a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
He used to run California's Berkeley Lawrence Laboratory, and he is leaving.
Oh, interesting. Any idea who's going to replace him?
No. I mean, that was literally just announced. The biggest news, I think, is that Algerian hostage crisis, saving some of the best for last year. It looks like there may have been 10 Americans. They've accounted for 5. They don't know where 5 are. They've been getting conflicting reports all day long. The terrorist organization that was holding them said 35 of the hostages died in the raid. This has not been at all confirmed, and we do know that there was a raid by the Algerian government. So the White House would not give any information. State Department, we called today, not a whole lot more information. It's pretty unclear.
And weren't most of these people employees of BP?
They were. I mean, or the oil company.
One of the oil companies.
Yeah, it was doing an oil job.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, just to some other real quick ones. In New York State, the journalists now want the data on who has guns under the new gun control law that was signed into order. They have to obtain special permission to access gun records. The journalists are not very happy campers. The Radio, Television, Digital News Association in New York are not happy about that.
Is this a law that was passed in response to that newspaper in New York publishing the names of people who owned guns in that county?
Yes, that's exactly what. And that's why the law was written in the way it was.
Yeah.
The National Highway Safety Administration said that they did 600 safety recalls that affected 17.8 million vehicles last year.
Wow. Well, at least they're keeping an eye on things, huh?
Yeah.
You know, if the Republicans had their way, they wouldn't have done any recalls.
We wouldn't have had that.
Your car could explode.
We wouldn't have had that organization.
There you go. Helen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. Back with more of the news of the day right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Once again, the 200 wealthiest, well, arguably wealthiest CEOs in the country, 200 of the wealthy, average CEO pay among this group is about $13 million a year. It's a little over $1 million a month, $250,000 a week, 5 day week, that would be $50,000 a day. Do I have that right? Can you imagine at the end of every day looking at your bank balance and, oh, another $50,000. Tell me when I can bring this back up. I can bring it up now. Okay. Hang on just a second here. just even thinking about that is pretty amazing. And these are the guys who are saying that, you know, we really need to change that retirement age to 70. Incredible. Okay, speaking of life and death issues, this more serious note. Dr. Michael Greger is the Director of Public Health and Animal Agriculture for the Humane Society of the United States. He's the author of several books, including Bird Flu, A Virus of Our Own Hatching, new book. His website is Dr. Greger, spelled GREGER.org. And Dr. Greger, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. Tell us about this bird flu that you're writing about.
Well, all eyes are really on this H5N1 bird flu strain, endemic in four countries and poultry populations. This is a virus that has an unheard-of human lethality, killing over 50% of the people it infects. Thankfully, only a few hundred people have become infected. The concern, though, is that it may mutate to a form easily transmissible from person to person, thereby triggering the next pandemic, which could truly be devastating.
So let's, for purposes of comparison, right now we've got a flu epidemic going on in the United States, and it's, you know, garden variety flu, and it has a fatality rate or a mortality rate of what? It's around 0.2%, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe 0.1%. Yeah, 1 in 1,000 people at most die every year. Now that's still, you know, tens of thousands of people. Flu is nothing to be,
Right. But, and in 1918 we had they called it the Spanish flu, although it started. My understanding is it started in a pig farm in Kansas, didn't it?
Well, yeah, they called it the Spanish flu because that was one of the few nations that didn't have a censored press during World War I, and so you heard all these newspaper reports of everybody getting sick.
Right.
But
that flu had a mortality rate of what?
That was about 2.5. So that's 25 times deadlier than the regular flu.
Okay. So and that was still 2%, between 2 and 3%, 2.5% of the people who got it died. And you're saying that this flu has a mortality rate of what?
59% so far, so about 60%. So again, that's about 25 times deadlier than the worst plague in human history, which killed more people in 25 weeks than AIDS has killed in 25 years. No war, no plague, no famine ever killed so many people in so short a time as the 1918 pandemic. Yet again, we now have a flu virus 25 times deadlier. So if you think about it, if we had a H5N1 pandemic, it could make the 1918 pandemic look like the regular flu, the worst epidemic in history.
It would be worse than the Black Plague of the 14th
century.
Well, it
certainly killed more people in as short a time. In fact, in 1918, half the world became infected. And so if you imagine that happening with a virulent pathogen, you know, we have to do everything possible to stop these dangerous...
Okay, so now this flu, my understanding is that right now, we're talking with Dr. Michael Greger, MD, the author of this new book, Bird Flu, A Virus of Our Own Hatching. This flu, you know, birds get flu, and they transmit it to each other very easily, and this flu likes to live in the nasal and tracheal passages of the birds, but it has not yet given itself the ability to get into people unless those people, like, kiss the bird or something like that. Somehow,
yeah, the people have been involved in very kind of intimate contact with these birds. Either they were, you know, eating raw duck blood pudding, or they were involved in the culling practices in which tens of millions of these birds have been had to be destroyed. So they had really high infectious doses.
Right.
And so there's quite a species barrier at this point in terms, again, this virus has been around for since 1997. And about 600 people have become infected, but of that, more than half have died. So that's why this is the virus that we do not want going, quote-unquote, viral.
Right. If this virus makes a small mutation so that it can attach itself to the human mucosa, you know, in other words, it's in the air, we breathe it in, and it sticks to us and infects us, then half the human race could die, or a quarter of the human race could die. Half the human race could get infected. And what is the process that increases the probability of that, and what can we do to decrease the probability of that?
Well, to prevent a pandemic like this, we really need to give these farm animals more breathing room. Basically, studies have shown...
Literally.
measures as simple as really just providing straw for pigs, for example, so they don't have the immunosuppressive stress of lying on bare concrete their whole lives, can significantly cut down on swine flu transmission rates. But really, in the long run, we need to follow, for example, the Pew Commission's recommendations to abolish these extreme confinement practices, like these gestation crates for pregnant pigs or battery cages for egg-laying hens like they're doing in Europe, and to follow the advice of the American Public Health Association, the largest association of public health officials in the world, which 10 years ago, 2003, called for a moratorium on factory farming, no more factory farms.
Wow. So our factory farming practices may be set to kill us. If we didn't have factory farms, would that mean that, I mean, would we, a large chunk of us have to go vegetarian, basically, or you know, what would be the outcome of that?
Well, look, I mean, factory farms are efficient, but no matter how cheap the meat, it may not be worth the risk.
Right.
You know, these the reason factory farms are such breeding grounds for diseases, the sheer number of animals, the overcrowding, the stress crippling their immune system, the ammonia from the excrement burning their lungs, the lack of fresh air, lack of sunlight. You know, you put all these factors together, you really have this perfect storm environment for the emergence and spread of new, you know, super strains of influenza. In one sense, it doesn't matter what we eat, because it's not like a foodborne illness. You can get the flu, regardless of what one eats, because it's respiratory infection. At the same time, what we eat is all that matters. The fact that we now have tens of billions of chickens being raised every year. In fact, we slaughter every day enough chickens spread wing to wing to wrap around the earth twice around the equator every day, about 45 billion chickens, about a billion pigs, and the fact that we have so many kind of, new feathered and curly-tailed test tubes for viruses to incubate and mutate within, billions more kind of spins that pandemic roulette. But look, along with human culpability comes hope. If changes in human behavior can cause new plagues, well, then changes in human behavior may prevent them in the future.
So you're calling for an end to factory farming.
End to factory farming, and as you pointed out, that really must involve a reduction in meat consumption in the industrialized world.
Right, which doesn't mean that everybody has to go vegan tomorrow, but you know, we could radically ramp down our consumption of meats and probably have very positive public health consequences.
Well, you know, we pick the two species, unfortunately, that are, that are susceptible to this disease. If we raised factory-farmed rabbits or cows, for that matter, cows are immune to the flu. We just pick the two species to make billions of on this planet, which are susceptible to a virus that can transmit to people and literally infect a significant proportion of the world's population in a matter of months.
You said this virus, this H5N1, has been around since 1997. Where did it come from in 1997?
Yeah, first detected 1996, the first human death 1997 in Hong Kong. The first discovery was in a goose population in Guangdong, southern
China. Was it a spontaneous mutation, or did it jump out of some other bird population that might have been buried deep in a jungle someplace for the last 1,000 years?
Well, for thousands of years, we've had these domesticated birds in these kind of situations, and we've never had these kind of highly pathogenic, highly disease-causing strains pop up like they have in the last few decades. What we think is happening is that in these factory farm environments, these so-called low-path viruses, these harmless viruses, acquire mutations to strike down and cause high disease rates and high
Amazing. Michael Greger, Greger, the book Bird Flu.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Greger, thanks for dropping by. And once again, the website, drgreger, drgreger.org. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Talk Media for the rest of us. So, if everybody stopped eating chicken, we'd have to have a lot of everybody to stop eating chicken for the demand to drop to the point where the factory farms would go out of business. But that's amazing. 40 billion chickens a day, enough to wrap wing to wing around the world twice. Every day we slaughter 40 billion chickens. There's not 40 billion people on Earth. We must be feeding them to our cats and to our dogs, and to it's got to go beyond just humans. It's just amazing. So, you know, would you become a vegan or a vegetarian if it meant saving the human race? Because it might. Todd in Spearfish, South Dakota. Hey, Todd.
Hi, Tom. Long time listener, first time caller.
Thank you for calling. You wanted to talk about guns and multinational companies?
Yes, you know, I'm a consultant and I work for a multinational company, and that also offers me the chance to go to other multinational companies and do consulting work. And one of the first things I see at either the gate or in the office when I go in to sign up and do their safety orientation to be allowed to come onto the property and work is right in that top part of the page is the rule that, you know, there will be no firearms brought onto this property of right. any kind.
Right.
And it just kind of follows up the last guy about, you know, the regulation that we have on guns for hunting. But, yeah, these multinationals, the screaming Republicans that run those companies, they've got their own set of gun rules. They don't want to have people bring guns onto their property or into their boardrooms.
Yeah. Well, it just makes sense. Just makes sense. Todd, thanks for sharing that story. I appreciate it. David in Springfield, Missouri, you want to talk about migrating birds and the flu?
Yeah, Tom. Can you hear me?
I can, just fine.
The migrating birds have been the natural harbor of influenza forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that we ought to end factory farming of chickens, turkeys, and pigs, not because of influenza, but because what they're being fed, which is causing lots of problems. But and the way they're treated is yeah. awful too.
Well, and they use mind-boggling amounts of water. It's like it's something like half the world's fresh water is used for animal agriculture.
Right, but the influenza always came from South China and Hong Kong and Indonesia because the migrating birds over South China exposed hundreds of millions of farmers that lived with their pigs and poultry all in the same house and still do in a lot of cases.
Right.
And so that the virus would go through the different species and have time to really mutate to the point that it could infect people.
Right.
And so,
you know, China is one of the few governments that actually has the power to say, okay, our 5-year plan is now to end factory farming starting tomorrow morning. It'd be really interesting to see. I mean, because there have been a bunch of deaths from this H5N1 in China or in areas surrounding China. It'd be really interesting to see if they take some action on this.
If the Chinese would make the farmers raise either pigs or chickens in
right.
like 100 or 200 mile swaths, then the virus wouldn't have the chance to jump between the species
right.
as well.
Or stop both of those and say, okay, we're just going to eat cows from now on. But then you got mad cow disease. I mean, it's like, you know, I just don't get what's wrong with just saying we're going to eat vegetables, but and fruits,
well,
grains.
I pasture my animals, and they yeah. have a very happy life till the very end, and yeah. have very good meat. So,
well, good on you. Good on you. Okay. Thank you, David. Thank you for sharing that story or the information. I appreciate it. Mike in Fairfax, Virginia. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Yeah, how you doing, Tom? I've been listening for the last couple of days, and it seems everyone's pretty happy with the universal background checks and tying state and federal databases together. So my question is, will that only be used to harass the gun owners, or will the states be able to do background checks for state employees? Can we use it to verify voting rolls for felons, track down deadbeat dads across state lines? Can we use it for all of the citizens to infringe on their privacy equally, or just gun owners?
Well, if you want to call tracking down deadbeat dads or making sure that people who are voting are actually registered to vote, infringing on
Florida
the privacy.
Florida has to sue the federal government to get access to the database to verify their voter rolls.
Yeah.
And to sue the federal government.
Frankly, I would much more trust the federal government than some of these state governments to do it. If you look at the way that it's being abused at the state level. But I also... You know, on the other hand, I'm a fan of keeping power as local as possible, as decentralized as power as possible, and the vote is the ultimate political power. So it's, you know, I find myself of two minds about that. Mike, thank you for the call. I get your point. Jason in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Jason.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call. Doing a great job as usual. Regarding your last guest who was talking about the pandemics of bird flu.
Yeah.
Now, I agree that factory farming that's due to or promoting our overconsumption of meat is terrible and promotes disease.
But I recall the last time the bird flu came around, it was usually found in small-scale operations where the owner was sleeping with the chickens, not in the factory farms. And also, just like the last bird flu, I heard people talking about how this, it's concerning because it's just one mutation away from becoming a human-based pandemic. I'd like to point out that every virus is just one mutation away from becoming a pandemic. Measles, chicken pox, polio could come back with vengeance with just one mutation.
Yeah. Well, a good point, although measles, polio, and chicken pox are not diseases that are endemic in the herds of the food animals that we grow. And, you know, they may occasionally infect them, but, and I don't know which ones infect which. I know that sheep, there's a relationship with syphilis, as I recall, but, you know, when you're looking at bird populations where the flu is just a normal thing in bird populations, that's a whole different thing. But your point is well taken. Jason, thanks a lot for the call. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more right after this. It's Tom Hartman.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
You ready to become a vegan to save the world? Or at least to save yourself from heart disease? The good, the bad, and the very, very agnogeniciously ugly, brought to you by EcoWine, the organic wine company at EcoWine.com. For more information, give them a call at 1-888-ECO-WINE. The good.
Stephanie Miller.
Stephanie Miller, indeed. Miller, a fellow progressive talk radio host and friend of mine, is bringing her sexy liberal comedy tour to our nation's capital. Along with help from Hal Sparks and John Fugelsang, Stephanie has created a show filled with humor from the left. Besides making audiences laugh out loud, the show is also benefiting local charities. For more information about the Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour, go to sexyliberal.com. Tickets are available at Ticketmaster.com, or you can get them at the box office at the Warner Theater here in downtown D.C. The bad. Governor Rick Snyder of Michigan. Snyder really loves to sell his state out to the highest bidder, so it should come as no surprise that he signed a bill that allows a private prison in Michigan with a troubled history to reopen. Geo Group, the owner of the currently vacant prison, has been accused of enabling juvenile abuse, riots, and even deaths at its facility. After Michigan shut down the facility in 2005 due to complaints, Geo Group spent millions of dollars to expand it, even though there were no prisoners to fill it. So now it looks like, despite a laundry list of abuse allegations, the private prison company will again rake in the money, all thanks to Governor Snyder. And the very, very ugly, the Republican State Leadership Committee. A nationwide Republican group sent out a memo recently bragging about its victories in the 2010 and 2012 elections and the role that gerrymandering played in them. According to the memo, drawing new district lines in states with the most redistricting activity presented the opportunity to solidify conservative policymaking at the state level and maintain a Republican stronghold in the U.S. House of Representatives for the next decade. As we all know, this plan worked out pretty well for Republicans as they ended up with a 33-seat majority in the House, and it worked out so well that they're expanding their election rigging and gerrymandering efforts for the 2016 election. And that is very, very ugly. As in, if you can't win the election fair and square, rig the game. It's downright bizarre. Kim in Roanoke, Virginia. Hey, Kim, thanks for watching the show. What's up?
Hey, great show. My question is, so how can we block these people in this business roundtable?
Good question. You got 200 of the most powerful CEOs in the world, and they're here in Washington, D.C., knocking on doors, and they all, you know, any one of them could easily write a $1 million check to any member of Congress. And I think it's organized people will outdo organized money. I think we saw that in the last election, at least at the level of the presidency. And you know, we just have to show up, participate.
Well, I'm looking at the article right now on the computer of their recommendations for this modernizing Social Security and Medicare.
posting to Facebook? Who do we contact?
Well, you have two senators. You're in Virginia. You have two senators, and you have one member of the House of Representatives. And if you go to callcongress.org, there's a phone number for the main switchboard at Congress. And if you're not sure who those people are, just tell them what state you live in. They'll tell you the senators. Tell them your zip code, and they'll tell you who your member of the House of Representatives is. And then they will connect you with their offices. So.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
Yeah. So that's where I would start. Go ahead.
It's just so outraging,
yeah.
Working all this time,
yeah.
Hoping to retire.
Yeah, I.
How can anybody think that we can just keep working? And
well, these guys will make more money if we do this. We're going to have to buy more of their insurance policies. We'll have to buy more, more of their pharmaceuticals because, aches and pains and all that kind of thing. And, they don't care. I mean, the average income among this group of 200 CEOs is $13.7 million a year. So, they don't give a rat's patootie about, anybody else retiring. This actually, in my mind, Kim, confirms my theory about why is it the CEOs make 13 million bucks a year. That, there's a fairly large pool of people who are college educated, have business experience, know how to run a business. I mean, it's not rocket science. There's probably fewer people who are good brain surgeons than there are. There's a large pool of people who can run a business. So why do they get so much money? Well, I think it's because there's a smaller pool of people who can destroy people's lives and still sleep at night. In other words, who are sociopaths. And that's basically what it takes to be a CEO of a modern transnational corporation. So, sociopaths are pretty tough to negotiate with, but, that's a tough one. Kim, thanks for the call. Trey in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Trey, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was just calling because I am a real-life vegan.
Uh-huh.
I eat only fruits and vegetables.
Good on you.
But one of the main influences of that decision was, reading your book, A Prophet's Way. And I want to thank you for writing that book. And Aaron Mueller, I'm surprised you don't speak about him more.
Well, he died a couple of years ago. He at the age of 95. And yeah. In April of this year, I'm going to be going back to Germany for the annual anniversary of his death, which is really at his stipulation. It's a party. And I don't talk about it. I don't talk about my religious perspective, shall we say, or whatever, too much on the air because it's more of a political show. But thanks for acknowledging it, Trey. And Salem International, it's pronounced Solemn, but it's spelled like Salem. SalemInternational.org is the website for Herr Mueller's work, which is being carried on by his son Samuel and his wife Ursula, and they're doing a great job. So, Trey, thank you very much for the call and for your kind words. Charles in Atlanta. Hey, Charles.
Hey, how you doing?
Just great.
Commenting on the guy called earlier,
mm-hmm.
He's talking about, Thomas Jefferson and what was in the, Constitution, and you wrote a book on it?
Yeah, I have. I've written several books on it.
I'm amazed at how people don't really understand how slavery was almost impermeated every part of the Constitution early on. It was like the economic issue of our country.
Well, it was the big economic debate between the North and the South. Slavery was less of an issue in the North. There were several northern states that had outlawed it before they joined the Union. Massachusetts, I believe, Rhode Island.
It was important in the North, too, because all of the raw materials in the South were shipped north.
You're right.
And that's how a lot of the... But anyway,
you're right.
There's a show on right now called The Abolitionist. It's on public television. It's,
mm-hmm.
It's a documentary. It's been going on for the past 2 weeks. And it's... there's a lot of things you talked about in there are actually in the series. And, talked about how,
the slave patrols.
All these laws are created basically to, prevent slaves from even, having any voice as a being.
Yeah.
And, people talk about how guns and everything. And basically, the Fugitive Slave Act and, John Brown,
mm-hmm.
They were so outraged because of, he was going to basically allow slaves to become empowered by fighting back. When they killed that man, they pretty much slaughtered him.
Yep.
To make an example.
Yep.
So guns were very important early on. And, I'm on a blog and people are trying to justify how, if slaves had guns, they would, but it's ridiculous because if they had guns, slavery would be almost no America.
Yeah. Yeah. If the slaves had guns, there would be no slavery. I mean, it's just that simple. And so to say, therefore, I mean, you know, it's an absurd argument, because the essence of it was that they were in slavery and the guns were used as the instrument of oppression by whites against African Americans. You're absolutely right. Dave in Armstrong Creek, Wisconsin. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Good.
And thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Notion that the NRA puts out that they're coming to get our guns, I think is really ridiculous, and I want to tell you why. Back in the early 80s, I had a gun stolen, and I wasn't really aware that it had been stolen. And about a month later, my parents got a call where I used to live that this gun was in, at their police department in a burglary case. Okay, so this gun was purchased back in the 70s. So they were able to trace it all the way back there. This is back before all the technology we have now.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is that, people are worried about this information being out there. It's been out there for years. And if they really wanted to take our guns, I mean, they could take them. I mean, they could. But, you know, the thing is, they'd have to pass a law first in Congress, which I don't think is ever going to happen.
Right.
And then they'd have to figure out a way to fund it. We can't even pay our police the way it is.
Mm.
And, it's just ridiculous. But I think you'd hit the nail on the head. Is a lot of the gun violence is due to the economic situation we're in, the way it's working right now.
Yeah.
And
well, there's an absolute correlation between violence in society and inequality in society. If you go to equalitytrust.org.uk, you can see all the statistics. Kate Pickett and Richard Wilkinson spent, much of their careers compiling this information and published them in two books. One's called Why Inequality Matters, and the other one's called The Spirit Level. And they did an analysis among about 25 or 30 countries. I think it might have been the 32 OECD countries. And they also did an analysis of state by state among the 50 states in the United States. And those states that have the highest levels of inequality, the greatest spread between the rich and the poor and the smallest number of people in the middle, have the most violence. And those states that have the lowest level of inequality have the least violence. And it's right there. Anybody can look at it. And you can factor out, whatever other variables you want. It's inequality is the thing that drives so many social ills, whether it's teenage pregnancy or mental illness or violence or, homicide, on and on it goes. It's all right there. Dave, thank you very much for the call. And this is why I say, roll back the Reagan tax cuts. That was the original sin of our era, was the Reagan tax cuts, because that put all that hot money into circulation and created a series of bubble economies, and it also started the engine of inequality. We were a far more equal society and a much more socially mobile society.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
When Reagan came into office, we were the most socially mobile, economically mobile society in the developed world. Now we're the least. Welcome back to Talk Media for the Sane Among Us, the Tom Hartman Program, and Bob in Raleigh, North Carolina. Bob, if the note here that Danielle took on when you called in is right, I think you might have the answer to why these 200 incredibly wealthy multimillionaire CEOs are walking around Capitol Hill right now asking congressmen to raise the Social Security retirement age to 70. What do you say?
Well, you're making my day, because I didn't realize I was that smart, but thank you very much.
well, lay out your theory. If it's what I think it is, I think you've figured it out.
Well, this is in regards to an article I read. I think Richard Trumka had wrote it maybe a couple months ago, because there was a similar CEO roundtable. And what he pointed out was that the people who are participating in that the majority, I think only 3 out of the 20 or 3 out of the 30 CEOs, their companies had fully funded their pension funds, and the rest were woefully under.
Right.
So that was part of my question also to you and anybody else, or you, Tom, I know that you're right up on the truth about, is that for 200, my guess is that, boy, if that percentage was for a smaller percentage, and I'd like to get my hands back in that article that I think it was Mr. Trumka wrote,
yeah,
what is it for 200? And I'm guessing that it is probably just that way so underfunded.
Probably 190 of those 200 CEOs have underfunded pension funds, and so if they can kick the retirement age up to 70, they can squeeze a few more years of money out of their workers and into their pension funds, or they can push back the date at which they have to start paying out of their pension funds, and you know, people will live fewer years after retirement, so their pension funds will have to pay out less, and all their actuarial tables will shift to the advantage of the company and to the disadvantage of the employees. I think you nailed it, Bob. I mean, it didn't make sense to me before. Why are these guys, other than the assumption that, you know, hey, it's, you know, there's a bunch of Wall Street companies here and they want to grab onto some of our money, you know, by getting a hold of that $2.7 trillion that's sitting in the Social Security Trust Fund. But I think that your consideration, your notion that what they're trying to do is deal with underfunded pension funds, that makes so much sense. Bob?
Well, I guess 2 years of business school plus engineering actually paid off after all these years. How's that?
There you go. Bob, you know, we've been giving away books for the best call of the day for a while here. We paused it for a little bit, but I'm going to do it today. We're going to send you a copy. I'm going to put you on hold right now, and you can tell Danielle he's on line two. Yeah, he's on line two. And we're going to send you a copy of Cracking the Code, an autographed copy of Cracking the Code, How to Win Hearts, Change Minds, and Restore the American Dream by Tom Hartman, a book I wrote. Danny in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Danny, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I have a little statement and then a question to put to you, and I appreciate your informed listeners. For quite a while now, I've been... when I first heard about how jam-packed chickens were in boxes, 3-foot boxes for their whole entire life, I started eating or buying only free-range, hormone-free, happy chickens, make happy eggs. And since then, I've kind of extended it to, because I like turkey and chicken and pork, and basically get locally grown, hormone-free, cage-free, and free-range meats. And I was wondering if you and your listeners think that we might be able to eventually eliminate these factory farms by just buying, well, locally and trying something different.
I think so. I think this is the point that Dr. Greger was making, is that as there's more demand for that and people are saying, I want something other than a factory farm product, there will be something other than factory farm products stepping in to fill that. So, yeah, I think that's entirely possible. Thanks a lot for the call, Danny. Jerry in Shoppin, Pennsylvania.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My input here is our First Amendment rights. Where we live in the middle of massive drilling country, we have no say-so. Our doctors are on a gag order. We have many sick people.
You're talking about fracking?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Our water has become so... We had the test done before. We never had the problems with the water and the land. We grew all our own food. We can't even irrigate with this water. And the fallout from the wells burning off has caused such an oily seepage on the top of this mountain. Everything died. And
wow.
I grew the food not just for us. I gave it away to people. We always had a basement full of, there was a fire people could eat, but I would be terrified of poisoning anybody. We have such sick children here, and yet we're on a gag order with the doctors. We can't even, we have no say-so.
What do you mean, a gag order?
If you go to the doctor and say, as I did, I took the water with me, our water result test, our radon test. I wanted to know if the illnesses I was experiencing had to do with this.
Okay.
They refused to look at anything, wanted to put me on tranquilizers because I was so upset over all of this. Would not even look at it. They cannot discuss it. If it has to do with it's bizarre what's happening in Pennsylvania. We have no say-so. Call your state representative. I've tried since 2008, and I was told you cannot impede the oil companies from doing their job.
It's because the local docs are afraid to take on the local oil companies. I mean, this is creating a lot of jobs. There's a lot of people who are making money off leasing their land to the oil companies. What doctor or what local official wants to risk that sort of thing, right?
Well, it's sad because of the children and the lawsuits over it. These children from sitting in the bathtub look as if they have been scalded. It's massive skin yeast infection.
Amazing.
I was given a number of George Washington University head of pediatrics medicine to give to the people out here. I don't have children or grandchildren here.
That's incredible. Jerry, thank you for the call. Thanks for sharing your story with us. Coming up tomorrow on the Tom Hartman program, it's Brunch with Bernie, our weekly national town hall meeting with America's Senator. Senator Bernie Sanders will be here talking about the important issues of the week and taking your questions, too. Plus, anything goes Friday. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. It ain't a spectator sport. You have to participate. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
Been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.